Este podcast se grabó el viernes 28 de junio al mediodía. Las cosas podrían haber cambiado.
Yeah, like every Democrat running for president will give a debate response in Spanish. Let's talk politics.
This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and the Snollygosters who shrewdly refuse to answer debate moderator questions in English or Spanish. I'm Mike Thompson. We are recording at noon on Friday, June 28th, in case you could not translate that timestamp.
I could not translate. I'd like to hold your feet to the fire on the verb conjugation, but I'm not the source to do that.
My daughter, who speaks fluent Spanish, helped me with that, and she says that I did nearly as well as Beto O'Rourke.
That's Wait, why she actually listened to you?
She coached me through it.
That's why we're bringing it up, because Beto and Cory Booker both gave statements in Spanish during the Democratic debate. Anyway, I'm Steve Brown, and coming up later in the podcast, Tim Ryan made his mark in the Democratic debate. We're not sure if it was a good mark or a bad mark, but we'll hear.
But first, Ohio's congressional map will remain gerrymandered for a few more years at least. The U.S. Supreme Court basically said excessively partisan gerrymandering is not our problem.
The court's majority admitted that even if excessive partisan map-making leads to unjust results, it is not the role of the judiciary to fix the system. That responsibility belongs to lawmakers and ultimately voters. So, to put it another way, they're telling lawmakers to fix the problem that they have created.
What a country. Joining us this week to talk about the week in Ohio politics is Ann Fisher. She's the host of All Sides with Ann Fisher, which is also a podcast you can find on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Welcome, Ann, to Snollygoster.
Thank you very much.
It's been a little while since you were here.
A few weeks.
Too long.
Gerrymandering. I mean, there's no surprise. The Supreme Court has always been very reluctant to get involved in this, what is a political decision. They think it crosses the line from the judiciary to get involved with partisan politics, which is what redistricting is, and is protected in the Constitution. So this is precedent. This is what they always do.
Right. And the fact that it isn't in the Constitution, and therefore it's not their wheelhouse. It does give voters an opportunity to change the rules. The question is whether they can do it fast enough or effectively enough.
The only thing in the Constitution is the state legislatures draw the maps. That's the only thing that's in the Constitution.
But this does violate precedent a little bit, at least not when it comes to partisan gerrymandering, but there was a 1995 decision related to racial gerrymandering where they said that drawing districts that weaken the voices of minority violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution, which is what these cases were based on. And they went the other way. They said it's not their role to decide what is too partisan of a map, even though they have said previously that a map, they can strike down a map for being too racially gerrymandered.
But racial gerrymandering also violates the Voting Rights Act of 1965.
But that's not the basis of the 95 decision.
Yeah. Right.
The 95 decision cited the Equal Protection Clause.
Right.
Yeah, you wonder if it had been different if it was the Democrats who were radically changing electoral maps, given the partisan nature of the Supreme Court.
Well, that was the case in Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, I think most people say it's mostly Republicans who have gerrymandered maps in Ohio and other areas. Bottom line is, it's now up to state legislatures. It's up to voters to care about this issue and hold folks accountable. Either state legislatures develop commissions, or we do have a fix here in Ohio.
And it's on the way.
Now it's really going to be tested to see if it's going to work.
Well, it doesn't go into effect until after the 2020 election cycle, which is super critical. Those decennial election cycles are super critical going forward. It'll be easily another 10 to 20 years before whatever changes we have show up on what's on the ballot. But, you know, there is another issue, and that's whether or not the state courts can take it on and whether or not there's something in the Ohio Constitution that addresses this.
That's what happened in Pennsylvania. It was the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that made them redraw the maps. But here, to refresh everyone's memory, here is the fix that we voters approved in 2018 by an overwhelming margin. It was a bipartisan fix worked out by the legislature. It basically gives incentives for Republicans and Democrats to develop this bipartisan map. To pass a map, lawmakers need a 3/5 majority and support of at least half of the members of both major parties. If that doesn't work, it goes to a 7-member commission, and at least 2 minority party members of that commission would have to agree to the new map. If that doesn't work, it goes back to the legislature. At least one-third of each party's members would have to vote for the deal. If that doesn't work, it goes back to the legislature, and this time a simple majority vote would draw the map, which is kind of the system we have now. But that map would only last for 4 years.
That's the rub. Why? If anything, Republicans in Ohio should be emboldened by this Supreme Court decision, right? They've been given a blank check, if you will. The Supreme Court has said it's not their role to step in on this process. Why wouldn't Republicans just draw a map every 4 years? I mean, reputation and optics be damned. What do they care? If they're in charge, why wouldn't they do that? It'd be the smart political move.
Well, it depends on how long a horizon they
how
watch.
How snollygoster
well,
you
Well, there, you know, there is that, but it's also the voters could step right back up and change the rules again and
with
make them even tougher.
With a constitutional amendment, yeah. One that supersedes?
Yeah.
Yeah, or what, I mean, however they did it this time, they could go right back to there. Obviously, the voters are better educated about this issue and willing to make changes, and they could. So I think that's the stick.
And that's why we have this, is because Republicans saw the writing on the wall. They dominate the state legislature when this was done in 2018. Mm-hmm. They dominated the legislature, governor's office, the whole nine yards. But they saw on the horizon a tougher redistricting question being put on the ballot mm-hmm. that would pass. So they went for this, quote, compromise.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if they don't adhere to the spirit of the compromise, the voters will respond.
I don't know. I don't think there are any consequences. I don't know. I don't see another ballot issue gaining steam. I don't know. Maybe I'm just skeptical, which is certainly possible.
Well,
given
the history
given
of Ohio
the sweeping
politics.
Support for the last one, I would say there's a good chance that they could muster what they needed to do it again. I think that's they just don't want to go
maybe
there.
You're right. Maybe I mean,
and it's a lot of time and effort. Every four years doesn't seem like that much of a big deal, but right now they only have to do it every 10
can't
years.
Can't you just hit like enter and now and
yeah,
then 47
much you can,
algorithms
but you still have to go through all those steps each every 4 years. And that takes you up to that time. You're still going through all the – it'd be a constant churn. I think the voters would get tired of it, and I think the lawmakers have to deal with it.
I can see the first one maybe. If Trump gets reelected, I can see the first one going only being a four-year map. I see the partisan nature of our country. I can see that they would stick to the four-year plan. But 4 years is a long time. Remember Donald Trump?
It's an eternity in politics.
4 years ago, Donald Trump was at 1%.
4 years ago, we were hearing jokes about Donald Trump's candidacy.
All right, we'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster, WOSU's weekly political podcast. See Ann giving you some love there with the All Sides promo.
Thank you very much.
The big Democratic debates, also a major story this week. Round one was on Wednesday night. Round two was on Thursday night. Here's a sampling of some of the highlights from both.
All the American citizens out there who feel you're falling behind, who feel the American dream's not working for you, the immigrants didn't do that to you. The big corporations did that to you.
Look at the business model of an insurance company. It's to bring in as many dollars as they can in premiums and to pay out as few dollars as possible for your health care.
If the control room could turn off the mics. If the control room could turn off the mics of our previous moderators, we will.
The American people deserve a president who will put your interests ahead of the rich and powerful. That's not what we have right now.
I think I'm the only one. I hope I'm the only one on this panel here that had 7 people shot in their neighborhood just last week. Someone I knew, Shahad Smith, was killed with an assault rifle at the top of my block last year.
I was 6 years old when a presidential candidate came to the California Democratic Convention and said, it's time to pass the torch to a new generation of Americans. That candidate was then Senator Joe Biden. He's still right today.
I'm still holding on to that torch.
The issue is, who has the guts
to take on Wall Street? To take on the fossil fuel industry, to take on the big money interests who have unbelievable influence over the economic and political life of this country.
My community is in anguish right now because of an officer-involved shooting, a black man, Eric Logan, killed by a white officer. And I'm not allowed to take sides until the investigation comes back. The officer said he was attacked with a knife, but he didn't have his body camera on.
Vice President Biden. I do not believe you are a racist, but I also believe, and it's personal, and it was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. You also worked with them to oppose busing.
It's a mischaracterization of my position across the board. I did not praise racists. That is not true, number one. Number two, if we want to have this campaign litigated on who supports civil rights and whether I did or not, I'm happy to do that.
Very long montage there. Yes. To wrap up, those are the voices of Bill de Blasio, Elizabeth Warren, NBC moderator Chuck Todd trying to fix technical issues, Tulsi Gabbard, Cory Booker, Eric Swalwell, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Pete Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, and then Joe Biden again. I intentionally put Kamala Harris and Joe Biden at the end there. I think they really stole the show at the end of the debate, particularly Kamala Harris on the end of night two. She seemed like the clear winner from both nights to me. I don't know who else could possibly have gained so much name recognition. At one time Thursday night, Kamala Harris was the most Googled phrase in America. I'm interested in hearing your thoughts.
First the first night was Raul Castro, you know, or Julian Castro. Yeah. Wrong country there.
Yeah.
Ron Castro. I would imagine that a lot of people hadn't heard much from him. They really didn't know what he was going, you know, what he was about.
He really went after Beto O'Rourke in particular.
Yeah, and he also went after the immigration issue, which is a primary issue in a lot of people's minds, even in Ohio, where it's a primary issue, it doesn't affect anybody.
Yeah, I think both nights were good. I think it was tough. There were long nights, 2 hours each night. And if you watched all 4 hours, God love
you. From 9 to 11 p.m. too. Thanks, yes. MSNBC. Appreciate that.
Steve can't watch.
I would thank California for that one.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, you're right.
But I think you're right. I think the most memorable moment was the debate between Kamala Harris and Joe Biden over his, back in the 1970s, reluctance to have the federal government force cities and towns to have busing.
Joe Biden suddenly a states' rights enthusiast.
Well, not suddenly. I mean, that was the issue back then, and that's how he stood on it. I thought was more profound is his crowing about being able to work across the aisle and work together with clearly some of the most rabid segregationists that have ever served in the Congress. Mm-hmm. And I think why in the world he would decide to do that with his kind of a record that he's going to have to defend, right?
Right. No, he was trying to make himself out as a peacemaker.
Yeah, but, you know, there's other people to make peace with. I mean, I'm thinking of, like, the John McCain's of the world, not segregationists.
And Kamala Harris did a great job of calling him out about the federal government's, you know, whoever you side with. She was saying Biden wants the federal government to intervene in some civil rights issues. He said if he was elected, his first legislative priority would be the Equality Act. Yeah. So clearly he favors government intervention when civil rights are being violated, but he didn't take that step in the 1970s, whyever that may be. She did a great job of holding his feet to the fire on that.
On night one, I thought Elizabeth Warren had a good night. You mentioned Castro had a good night. Cory Booker, I thought.
He improved his standing.
Broke through some of the noise and had a good night. Tim Ryan was on night number one. The Ohio congressman had his good moments.
We have a perception problem with the Democratic Party. We are not connecting to the working class people in the very states that I represent, in Ohio, in the industrial Midwest. We've lost all connection.
And he had not so good moments, like when he debated pulling troops out of Afghanistan with Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard.
We have got to have some present there.
The Taliban was there long before we came in. They were flying to Afghanistan thinking that we're going to somehow squash this Taliban
I didn't say squash them. When we weren't in there, they started flying planes into our buildings. So I'm just saying right now,
the Taliban didn't attack us on 9/11. Al-Qaeda did.
Well, I understand.
Taking on a veteran on military issues is
not even that. It's an issue that people aren't. To a certain extent, yeah. He didn't know what he was talking about.
I think he just dropped the ball on that answer. I think he knew what he was talking about. He just got flustered. I mean, confusing the Taliban with Al Qaeda. The Taliban supported Al Qaeda, but obviously Al Qaeda was the group that attacked us on 9/11. I mean, it wasn't a good performance.
I think that his problem is that he can't run for president out of working class, you know, Ohio.
I thought his messaging there was
his good. Messaging is fine, but that's not going to get you elected president in 2020. I mean, it's just not. It's just you cannot limit yourself to that demographic and get the springboard you're going to need. He did something that Bill de Blasio did, and I also think Delaney, whose first name is escaping me right now, that they brought up what the Democratic Party needs to do and kind of writ large. And nobody else really did that. Everybody else was about them. They brought up the larger party question, and I think that is a critical question going forward.
My guess is that primary voters really don't care.
They don't, but it's going to go on the record.
Yeah. Aside from the stuff we've already talked about, what were your favorite moments of the debate?
I thought it was interesting how so few candidates, it was just an interesting dynamic when they asked the candidates to raise their hand on who would repeal private health insurance. If it strikes me correctly, Bernie Sanders and then Kamala Harris and then on night two, and then she walks that back. It was completely different on night one, where I think every candidate raise their hand on night one? How many raised their hand on night one?
No, just Elizabeth Warren and do I want to say?
I forget. It was basically the liberal wing of the primary field.
Yeah, Kamala Harris's response to that was a little bit of a faux pas. She did so great with the thing with Biden, but then she had done that too before, where she'd been asked the same question and she said yes, and then she had to walk that back a little. So she has struggled with that issue of how to balance private insurance versus Medicare for all.
I did like that the way that they did that they asked people to just raise their hand and kind of cut through the noise. Just let us know where you stand, and then instead of letting them just, then they have to explain why they stand there. And that I felt like that was helpful. What I didn't like is how fast it went. I mean, for some people it was 2 hours, but for me it was 2 hours of substance that we're not accustomed to getting. And I think it was really valuable, but there wasn't enough time with 10 people on the stage.
I just like Pete Buttigieg was asked by Rachel Maddow on night two about the fact that his police department is only 6% African American when his city, I believe, is 25% African American. Of course, they just had a police shooting. He basically said, I haven't gotten the job done.
Yeah.
To see a politician stand up there on a presidential debate stage and admit a failing, I thought was honestly refreshing to see. Now, whether that hurts him, whether that helps him down the road, or it just is what it is, you can't lie with, you can't argue with those numbers. And he just, we did make
excuses.
There
was no excuses.
He just, you know, the buck stops with him, and he took the heat, and it just was refreshing to see.
Yeah, I agree.
He took some heat. He did defer blame when he talks about, he said he has to wait for this whole investigation to play out, which is a reasonable response, but it's not, doesn't really make for good television. Ann Fisher, host of WOSU's All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, also a podcast you can find on iTunes or wherever else you're at. Thank you again for joining Snollygoster. We look forward to your return. I hope you get some rest. I understand you had to do some travel, but
thank you for some travel.
No, you did some travel last night, Thursday night, so now you're here on Friday. Thank you for taking the time. That will do it for this week's episode. Be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes. Also, tell your friends about us. Word of mouth helps. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
A reminder, we're off next week, 4th of July. We're going to celebrate our nation's birthday, so we'll be back in 2 weeks for a fresh edition of Snollygoster.
Here.
For Snollygoster, I'm Mike Thompson from WOSU Public Media.